Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We may have some sort of audio issues. Hopefully not. I really don't know. Anyway, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. This is Monday to start the, tomorrow is actually from the date of this show. It's the last day of February, the 28th of February. We're speaking on the 27th. This show is being broadcast live on the 27th and soon to be podcast. And I know some of you out there are just listening to my podcast, and that's beautiful. That's wonderful. I totally appreciated you podcasting the show after the live shows are over, are done and processed, and they become podcasts, and you start to listen to them. That's okay, because you can always listen to my shows on the internet. You know, I'm all over the world. I can hear other radio shows. I can hear other radio hosts say, that's not a big deal. Our shows are the same thing. Okay, welcome to the show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me. I hope you enjoyed all the shows. We have a slew of guests to appear on the show this week. Hopefully, if nothing happens, if they put this on their calendar, there shouldn't be any problems. Well, anyway, for the start of the week, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show for the third or fourth time. I'm just so giddy about it because, I was off for the whole weekend. I'm always, and no matter what I'm doing when I'm off, I'm always wanting to be doing the show. You know, I do the show come rain, come snow, come sunshine, whatever, you know, just me, maybe if I, you know, if I feel like it, you know, I can do it the way I want to do it, because I'm like Donald Trump. I call the shots when it comes to my show. And but that's not, I'm not being arrogant by saying that, because I'm not an arrogant person. It's just that it's fun, folks. It is totally fun to be able to do the things you want to do. What is this? It is so much fun. Okay, let me do this first. All right, it is so much fun to be able to be your own boss on something that you love doing. And I've said this many times on the show, be your own boss. Stop following people. Stop, you know, sitting and spectating, looking and watching other people do things and go great and go on to be great and to do great things. You start to do that. You know, because it's so many of us to sit around and just watch other people do it all for themselves. I'm pretty sure a lot of you out there are sick and tired of your jobs. You hate them. You hate the supervisor. You hate the manager. You hate everything. But you smile through it because you need your job and you have to pay your rent, car note, mortgages, and all that kind of stuff. So you smile and you deal with it. But there's nothing like, folks, being your own boss. It's nothing like calling your own shots, making your own decisions, people coming to you, asking you for this, asking you for that, asking for your help. And you have no walls between you to stop you from, you know, doing those things for those people who are asking you for help. Believe me, it's such a great thing. And I wrote a short book, very short book. You can find it on Amazon. Other people have written about this too, so I'm not the only one. But this is called Just Do It For Yourself. That's the title, Do It For Yourself. It means, you know, we all are going to have to work for somebody else during our lifetime. Maybe the early parts of our life. Everybody going to do it. I've done it. You know, we're going to have to work for other people. But, you know, use that time when you're working for other people, use that time to tell yourself, I'm going to learn as much as I can from this job. I'm going to learn as much as I can from this person, this individual. And I'm going to do all the right things while I'm here at this job. I'm going to be learning my ass off. And once I learn so much and I'm experienced at this, at business, I'm going to go out and do it for myself. That's what you do. You work for somebody for, maybe even 10, 20, or 30 years, and it's time for you to, you know, or less, for you to get out there on your own. You know, because, you know, you work for somebody, let's say if you work for somebody 20 years or 35 or whatever, and suddenly you find yourself out of a job, sitting at home by yourself, looking out of the window, you know, that's not good because, you know, I mean, if you idle for so long, if you're sedentary for so long, it could have big health consequences. Keeping yourself busy is keeping yourself healthy in a way. Yeah, yeah. So go out there. I mean, I'm not saying not to work with somebody. You know, I'm not saying do not get a job. We all gonna need a job. I mean, you got to pay our bills. But you don't have to linger at this job. You don't have to be treated badly, belittled, talked down to in order to keep your job. You can do that for a while, but hey, wow, break out of that cycle and start doing things for yourself. Open up your own business, even if it's a little bakery shop or pizza making shop. You know, just get out there and do it for yourself. You know, stop working and call your own shots. Have people working for you instead of you working for them. That feels great. It feels wonderful. And then you're helping other people in the process. You are a leader in the community. Anytime you own your own business, you're an entrepreneur or sole proprietor or whatever they call it now. You are a leader. Business people are leaders because there's other folks who are coming up who want to be business leaders, and they look at you as someone that could probably show them the ropes. So, you know, I mean, you can work for somebody for 5 or 10, 15 years, but if that's possible, or even less. I mean, if you know you have the ability to go out here and make it on your own and find a way of filling that need that's out here, you're going to be successful. And that's what business is all about, going into business for yourself, finding a need and filling it. Well, F-I-L-L-I-N-G, filling it. Finding a need and producing. Because if you find a need out here, people are going to gravitate towards you because they're going to look for you to provide that need and they're going to pay for it. I mean, you can go into business just by doing, if you are into hobbies, take your hobby and, you know, if it's sellable, take your hobby and start making money at it. Turn it into a business instead of a hobby. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We may be having some audio problems here, folks. So if I'm going in and out on you, I do apologize. The show has just started, so I'm not really privy to anything. I'm going to try to better this equipment so I can have a closer eye on what's going on. That's what a businessman does. That's what it takes to go into business. You can deal with your own situations yourself instead of having to pay other people to do it for you. And sometimes when you pay other people to do things for you, they do a rotten job. Believe me. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Okay. It says up here on my marquee that author Paul Delger is going to be on the show today, hopefully. And I believe he's going to be talking about public speaking, you know, but let me get on to this. Did anybody see the Oscars last night? Sunday night, you know, even before the big fiasco at the ending where they said that La La Land won for the best picture, and they found out that after so many minutes, they found out that wasn't true, that it was actually Moonlight. Two movies that I haven't seen, so I can't really criticize them either way or the other, but the Oscars, that was one fiasco. That was one major fiasco, you know, mixing it up like that, and the people coming up on stage thinking they've won, and finding out that the other picture won, Best Picture, I believe it was Best Picture. And Jimmy Kimmel, I think he's the worst host. He's very talkative. He's very talkative, and sometimes he's like an actor to me. He's like an actor who overacts his part. He was totally not good in my estimation. I mean, he was all over Matt Damon as if they couldn't get along and stuff like that, as if they didn't like each other or something. But it was all staged. It was all a play. It was all put together by them too, so they knew what was going on. And the audience, I'm pretty sure, and the viewers at home, they also knew what was going on between those two. But, you know, but before all of that, I sat down and I watched the Oscars from beginning to end. And I wasn't impressed with it. I was not impressed at all with the Oscars. I know some of the women that walked up to the mic who were presenters, some of them looked ridiculous in their dresses. They thought they was, you know, pretty and beautiful. But I thought some of the dresses, I'm pretty sure you did, were just downright ugly and just, you know, just not fit for the Oscars, I think. You know, that's just me. 347-857-1762. And there's no doubt about it that Kendall I mean, he set off a few racist remarks. Maybe he didn't think anybody caught them, but he was saying some racist things and doing some racist stuff, you know. And before he was saying those things, I was kind of critical of him, especially during his open monologue. I don't think the guy was funny at all. I thought he was pathetic. You know, I mean, I'm looking right now to the right of me, and they're showing clips from the mix up from the authors during the author's Oscars ceremony night, which was last night, Sunday, from the date of this show. Oscar mix-up, Warren Beatty was handed the wrong envelope. Someone gave him the wrong envelope, so it wasn't Warren Beatty's fault. He just read what someone gave him. So everybody's looking at it, oh, Warren Beatty, he messed up. Wow, he's through. It's over. He was handed the wrong envelope, and he knew something was wrong when he opened it and he read it. If you watched the Oscars last night, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you didn't, then you will not. But anyway, it was one of the worst Oscars I think I've saw in a long time. Even though I don't watch the Oscars much, I didn't watch them last year, the year before that, the year before that. But this time, I decided to sit down and just, you know, watch it in its entirety. And I wished I had not of. I mean, I'm not going to be watching Oscars in the future. I think it's something about the Oscars. They're not. It's not the celebration that it used to be years ago. It's not that. You can tell it's watered down. You can tell that it's inexpensive. There's been budget cuts all over the place, and it tells, and it shows, and it shows, and it shows. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. It's 6:16 in the city of Chicago, p.m. Chicago time, and we've been talking about the blunders at the Oscars. I think we're going to be actually in and out of the show. We'll be talking about the Oscars and Jimmy Kendall. I'm not saying that Jimmy is a racist. I'm just saying maybe he was saying things so quickly and so fast that he didn't realize he was making some racial undertones on some of the things he was saying. But anyway, I'm not going to accuse him of being that until I know for sure, you know, because and that's another thing, folks, you never know about people. You think you know people and you do not know them. I've watched the Jimmy Kendall show for years. For years, I have watched his show, and I have enjoyed it because I've basically said the guy has talent, and I do think he does have talent, but I never knew, I don't know, or that if he's a racist or not, you know, that's him. That's up to him. Okay. There we go. Jimmy Kendall's casual Oscar racist detracted from diversity wins. He was not a good, I mean, even the media is saying things about Jimmy Kendall. Kimball, okay, Kimball, K-I-M-M-E-L, Kimball. Jimmy Kimball kicked off the Oscars Sunday night with a joke that perfectly skewered the Trump administration treatment of minorities. Oh, yeah, Trump came along and said the reason why that there was this mix-up at the Oscars is because they were bashing him. This guy ought to get a life. That mix-up at the Oscars had nothing to do with him. This Trump takes other people's adversity and try to use it to make him look good. That had nothing to do with him. Trump, this is Donald Trump. And I'm hearing that they're going to be investigating this guy and his team of thugs for their Russian ties. I think it just, I don't know if that's ever going to come, because you have to realize that the Republicans control everything. I mean, everything, the presidency, the Congress, the state houses, the governorships, some of the mayor, the mayorships around, if I said that correctly, around the United States. So they control everything. They're in control of all of it. All of it. And that's sad because I sat here for a year and a half begging Democrats and independents to get out here and vote. Democrats and independents to get out here and vote. I told them the ramifications. If they do not, and they did not. So this is what we get because a lot of people didn't vote. In the presidential election for 2016 on November 8th, a lot of people went out here and pulled the lever for Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton says she's got 66 million votes. You know, so they pulled the lever for Hillary Clinton, but they did not pull the lever for the governorship. They did not pull the lever for the Senate. They did not pull the lever enough to hold the House of Representatives. So people did vote in the presidential election. If you go back and evaluate the popular vote. But for the electoral vote, Trump won all the states with the most electoral votes. He's got the states with the most electoral votes. Even though he won less states and he got less votes, but he got most of the electoral votes. And from the Constitution, if you get over 270 electoral votes, you are president. You become president, regardless of the popular vote, which stinks. That's like saying your vote and my vote didn't actually count. But it did. It did. It just electoral vote just screwed everything up. If the electoral vote would have gone against Donald Trump, the Republicans would be trying to get rid of it. And maybe even successfully. They would be trying to get rid of it. But the Electoral College went in the favor of Donald Trump. That is why they are not saying anything against it. If it went not against, I'm sorry, it went for Donald Trump. The Electoral College went for Donald Trump. And it went against Hillary Clinton. Because if it had gone against Donald Trump and the Republicans would be saying, well, we got to get rid of it. It's rigged. Everything is rigged to Donald Trump. If it does, if it's not going his way, it's rigged. If you're saying something negative about Donald Trump, as he says about other people, you know, you're a loser. Everything you do is no good. This is one of the worst presidents ever. And I think this Oscar, the Oscars would go down in history, in Oscar history, as one of the worst ever. There's no doubt about that. You know, Kimball and his racist remarks and the great big mix up at the end. You know, Kimball came out. Jimmy Kimmel came out and looked at Warren Beatty like it was his fault. Like he had screwed up. Warren did not screw up. If people know Warren Beatty from Bonnie and Clyde and a lot of other movies throughout the 60s and 70s and television shows, I think he's about 89. I'm not 89, but 79, 80 years old. So he's up there in age. And Jimmy Kimmel came out on the stage and started, you know, seemed like he was yelling at Warren Beatty when it was not his fault. So this goes down to me, from my opinion, if you may have a different one, that to be one of the worst Oscars ever. And like I said before, I don't usually watch these things. I don't. But I did yesterday. I did sit down to watch it in its entirety, and I was kind of sort of disappointed. It wasn't what I wanted to be. It wasn't what I thought it would be. It's not what it should have been like it was years ago, even decades ago. Even yet, when Bob Hope was the host of the Oscars, it wasn't it's just not as good as it used to be. It may become better in the future, but I doubt it if we have Trump and the Republicans in the office, because they're going to decimate everything, you know. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Let's see if we can listen to Ashley Judd. I just love this clip.
All right. Next on the to-do list. When we take over the DNC.
Oh, Michael.
Ashley.
My name is Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd is here.
And I am a feminist. And I want to say hello to Independence Avenue in the back. All the way down to 17th Street.
Wow.
And I bring you words from Nina Donovan, a 19-year-old in Middle Tennessee, and she has given me the privilege of telling you what she has to say. I am a nasty woman. I'm not as nasty as a man who looks like he bathes in Cheeto dust. A man whose words are a diss track to America. Electoral college sanctioned hate speech contaminating this national anthem. I'm not as nasty as Confederate flags being tattooed across my city. Maybe the South actually is gonna rise again. Maybe for some, it never really fell. Blacks are still in shackles and graves just for being black. Slavery has been reinterpreted as the prison system in front of people who see melanin as animal skin. I am not as nasty as a swastika painted on a pride flag. And I didn't know devils could be resurrected, but I feel Hitler in these streets. A mustache traded for a toupee. Nazis renamed the cabinet electroconversion therapy, the new gas chamber, shaming the gay out of America, turning rainbows into suicide notes. I am not as nasty as racism, fraud, conflict of interest, homophobia, sexual assault, transphobia, white supremacy, misogyny, ignorance, white privilege. I'm not as nasty as using little girls like Pokemon before their bodies have even developed. I am not as nasty as your own daughter being your favorite sex symbol. Like your wet dreams infused with your own genes. But yeah, I'm a nasty woman. A loud, vulgar, proud woman. I'm not nasty like the combo of Trump and Pence being served up to me in my voting booth. I'm nasty like the battles my grandmothers fought to get me into that voting booth. I'm nasty like the fight for wage equality. Scarlett Johansson, why were the female actors paid less than half of what the male actors earned last year? See, even when we do go into higher paying jobs, our wages are still cut with blades sharpened by testosterone. Why is the work of a black woman and a Hispanic woman worth only 63 and 54 cents of a white man's privileged daughter? This is not a feminist myth. This is inequality. So we are not here to be debunked. We are here to be respected. We are here to be nasty. I'm nasty like my blood stains on my bed sheets. We don't actually choose if and when to have our periods. Believe me, if we could, some of us would. We don't like throwing away our favorite pairs of underpants. Tell me, why are pads and Tampax still taxed? Ooh, that was a brand name. Why are tampons and pads still taxed when Viagra
All right, that was Ashley Judge from a few weeks ago, the Women's March. I always like to play that clip because it's just riveting. I love hearing her speech. Now, if Hollywood could hear that, if the Oscars could hear that, they'd probably give her an Oscar just for that speech out there during the Women's March against Donald Trump. Because he wants to cut Planned Parenthood and all of this kind of stuff and in Obamacare and stuff like that. I always enjoy that because she's always such a great person. Maybe one day we can have her on the show, huh? All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's about 6:30. Let's see if we can do this. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, George. It's Paul Elder calling from Iowa.
All right, Paul Delger from Iowa. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Everybody, let me introduce my guest, Paul Delger from Iowa. Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for coming. Thanks for wanting to do it. Now, tell everybody what you do and why you should. Why is it good for us? Go right ahead.
George, I'm a motivational speaker with a heart to reach high school and college students plus athletes with a message of overcoming. I was born with a cerebral palsy, so I have a body that is very different than other people, and it's very noticeable. I have a very limited use of my right side, so when people see me, that they can see right away that there is something different with me. And I've faced a lot of, like when I was in grade school, I would have kids bullying me long before there was a march on bullying. This was back in the 60s. In fact, my mother took me out of one school because I was bullied by kids that happened to be a private school and put me in the public school, and they did the same thing.
Yeah.
Over the years,
I was going to say something similar happened to me as you're telling it. I know I have a son. He has autism. He has a slight disability. And like your parents, I pulled him out of so many schools because I used to have to come up there and I literally would have to pull the bullies up off of him because they'd be fighting him. And that hurt a lot. And I would take him out of school and it would happen again and again and again. And sometimes it would even happen with grownups, teachers, caregivers standing there watching and letting it happen to him. You know, because I have walked up on these kinds of people so many times, watching my son being bullied, watching him being taunted, hit, smacked, or hit, or thrown something was thrown on him. Some of these teachers and some of his caregivers would let this stuff go on. And I never could understand why people would do that to other people who could not defend themselves.
Right. Yeah, that's a really, really tough thing. And when you're in the shoes, it's actually very, very hard. But I decided that I was going to either have to fight for myself or have a miserable school time, so I actually developed a few strategies to try to help me. One of them was I hung around with older kids, and that stopped the bullying because older kids would serve as a protection for me. And another thing I did was I just kept walking or acted like I wasn't hearing those people taunt me. even though I might have been breaking in and inside, I just kept trying to pay no attention to them. And the other thing I did was I was always very interested in the sports, and so I try to keep up with all the players and the teams, and young boys, when they're like 7 or 8 years old, a lot of them are really into sports, and so that kind of got me inside. And as time went on in school, the bullying got less and less.
Yeah. You're right. It'll get less and less. You know, my son, he's a fighter. He can fight, but the only time he'll physically hit anyone, they have to really, really make him angry. You know, so they have to really make him angry. And so he's a big kid. So a lot of kids would probably not mess with him now because he's taller than I am, but he still has the problem. But, you know, I mean, it's ways you can get around it. It's ways that you can do it. All right, Paul Delger on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Have you written a book or anything?
No, but I'm a writer too. I'm a long-time journalist, back kind of an old school journalist. I used to do a lot of newspaper writing and things like that. But mm-hmm. now my focus is largely on bringing a hope and encouragement to people, especially, as I said, high school and college kids with the message of overcoming.
Yeah.
And go into schools and talk to kids. And I love students, and they seem to love me. So
that's been a real
blessing.
And so this is how you became a motivational speaker, because you're sharing some of your life's experience with them, and you're telling them how to try to avoid some of those pitfalls that you've gone through.
Absolutely. And they know that I'm a real person, because they can see that, humanly speaking, I'm very flawed. So
yeah, that's great. So you've been, they have your acceptance has been pretty positive.
Yes, in fact, last fall when I spoke at a school, I had a young gal. She was probably in a junior high school. She came up to me with a big smile and said to me, "Your speech was very, very inspirational. Thank you."
Yeah,
Those are the reasons why I do what I do, to try to help students and help people.
Yeah, I was going to say that, I mean, whenever you get that type of feedback, that positive feedback after you've given a speech, it just makes you want to go on and on and on, because you have touched someone and they are very appreciative of that. And, you know, you in some ways, you've kind of gotten yourself a few fans.
Yes. And I think the fact that I'm a faith-based man, and I feel like I've been called to do this and to encourage people.
Oh, okay, that's great. Go right ahead.
It was kind of interesting, because I thought when I first started this, I thought, well, I actually stutter, so I thought, wow. How am I going to do this if I stutter? But, you know, once I get into my topic and I get really involved, my words seem to flow, and I've been blessed from the Lord in that.
I mean, you sound great to me, man, and I totally appreciate you coming on the show to share with my listeners, because this show is all about trying to make the world a better place, and with people like you, I don't see how we can fail. Do you plan on writing a book one day? I mean, you can, you know, people come people all over the world can come by and buy your book, and you talk about your book on the show. Are you planning on writing a book? Or?
Yes, it's always been in the back of my mind, and I'm truly thinking about it. And my talk is entitled "Keep Your Uniform On," and so I think that'd be a great title for a book, right, George?
It really would. Yeah, of course, of course. So you know what? Because what you're doing is just motivating, and you're speaking, and you're going out to these schools and things, talking to teenagers and kids, and you know. There's no way your book would not sell or be popular or be successful.
Sure. Yep. I would, if I'm really honest and I'm really forthright with my struggles and my victories, I think that would be a good.
Yeah, because you have people all over the world are going to get that book, going to pick up that book because they want to learn something, and especially if they're going through some of the things that you've gone through. And people like to read kind of things, and they like to hear people talk about some of the things that they've gone through so they can try and, you know, pick themselves up and better their lives, because majority of Americans, people out in the world, most of us have encountered bullies, and that would be a great topic to try to tell people how to counter bullies. You know, like you said, you hung around with older guys and they kind of protected you from bullies. But a lot of people, you know, that's not for a lot of people, you know, because, you know, but you're talking about people who are probably disabled or handicapped.
Yes. And I've actually... when I was a kid, when I was in first grade, I put my hand through the school glass window, and I had a major cut, and I ended up getting a 175 stitches, and the doctor who sewed me up said I could have bled to death, but the school nurse humanly saved me by putting pressure on my arm and not taking the glass out.
Oh, okay. Do you can you tell everybody where you can be contacted for more information on what you do?
Absolutely. They can call me on my business line at 641-762-3684.
Wow, and they will get you, or will they get a voicemail?
Yep.
Or
they will get me. I'm a one-man shop, George.
Okay. Hey, Paul Delger on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks a million for coming by, dropping by, calling, and sharing your story. I'm pretty sure a lot of people out there appreciate it. And this show will be podcasted, so you can always, people are going to download it and listen to it. Would you like a link of this show to put it maybe on your website
Absolutely.
Or your blog?
Yep.
Okay. I will send you that link maybe in a few hours, or if not a few hours, then look for it by tomorrow to the show.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me, George.
No problem. Bye-bye. All right. That was Paul Delger on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And his story is amazing, folks. It is amazing. And I always try to have people like that on the show because it's all about making the world a better place, even if it seems impossible. That's what it's all about. And I'm so proud of this, that there are so many other people, especially TV people, celebrities, internet folks, and talk show host people. They're all about the same thing, making the world a better place. I don't think anybody should be too selfish when it comes to making the world a better place, because believe me, the world needs it in some cases. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to my guest. And we are going to do this if we can. Thanks to Paul Belger.
To former Labor Secretary Tom Perez, you issued a statement saying, quote, at a time when Republicans control the White House, the U.S. House, U.S. Senate, and two-thirds of all state houses, it is imperative that Tom Perez understands that the same old is not working. So, Senator, did the same old win?
Well, look, Keith ran a great campaign. He took on, in essence, Democratic insiders, and yet he came close to winning. That was a very effort when you realize that he was playing inside the establishment's house. But right now, I think Tom Perez, who was a very, very good Secretary of Labor, has a real opportunity in his hands, and I hope he seizes it. And that is to understand that, in fact, the way the Democratic Party has been run for decades has not worked. We need a total transformation. We've got to open up the party to working people, to young people, and make it crystal clear that the Democratic Party is going to take on Wall Street. It's going to take on the greed of the pharmaceutical industry. It's going to take on corporate America that is shutting down plants in this country and moving our jobs abroad. The idea that Trump thinks that the Republican Party is going to be the party of working people when he has appointed people to his administration who want to cut Social Security, want to cut Medicare, want to cut Medicaid, or who want to provide a budget which will give huge tax breaks to billionaires like Trump and then cut back on education and health care for the American people. If that's a party that stands for working people, God help us all. So I think our job now is to rally the grassroots to take Trump on and to fight for a progressive agenda.
Well, you saw President Trump's tweet suggesting that the system was rigged against Keith Ellison in the same way that the DNC system was rigged against you in the primaries. Does he have a point?
No, he doesn't have a point. That's what the system is. And one of the things that Tom is going to have to change is to figure out how we elect national Democratic leaders. I'm not quite impressed with the process that now exists. But the bottom line here right now is that yesterday, among other things, there were 150 rallies all across this country, most of them in front of Republican congressional offices, where citizens of this country are telling their members of Congress, have the guts to come out and meet with us, explain to us why you're going to repeal the Affordable Care Act, throw 20 million people off of health insurance, do away with pre-existing conditions. Don't hide. Don't simply run to your wealthy campaign contributors. Talk to your constituents. And you are seeing that movement, millions of people engaged. We are going to transform this country.
Well, let me ask you, sir, because you have a massive email list that helped your presidential campaign raise $218 million online from 2.8 million donors. Are you going to give your list to the Democratic National Committee so that you can help them become more grassroots?
We are going to do everything that we can, and we have started that progress to transform the Democratic Party into a party that stands up for working families. And we have and we will strongly support those candidates who are going to take on the issues of income and wealth inequality. They're going to take on the greed of the pharmaceutical industry. Those people who want to make public colleges and universities tuition-free, who understand, unlike President Trump, that climate change is real and that we've got to transform our energy system. So we're going to work to support progressives who are running for the Senate, who are running for the House, who are running, and Tom Perez made this point, for school board, for city council, for state legislature. I'm right now in Kansas. Last night, we had 5,000 people coming out in Topeka, Kansas. Kansas is not a Democratic stronghold, but we're beginning to see an activation here in Kansas and in states and communities all over this country. People who are prepared to take on Trump. People are prepared to fight for progressive change.
That sounded like you were saying that you're going to keep your EMLS to support the candidates that you think are progressives, and you're not going to give it to the Democratic National Committee. Did I interpret that incorrectly?
Well, where we are right now is that we are going to support and have supported and will continue to support those candidates who have the guts to stand up for working families and take on the big money interests, the people around Donald Trump. You know, Jake, when you talk, when President Trump talks about being the party of working people, man, he has certainly put together an administration of working people. He has more billionaires, more millionaires in his cabinet and his administration, any president in history. He has appointed people who are going to decimate the needs of the elderly, the children, the sick, and the poor. So what we are going to do is support those candidates who have the guts to stand up to the 1% and fight for the 99%.
Okay. I think my interpretation was correct. But let's talk about that you're talking about right now. President Trump said at CPAC on Friday that he likes you because he says you are right on trade. And take a listen to what the president's top advisor, Steve Bannon, had to say about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that trade deal with Asian countries that you vehemently opposed.
I think one of the most pivotal moments in modern American history was his immediate withdrawal from TPP. That got us out of a trade deal and let our sovereignty come back to ourselves.
I know that you disagree with many aspects of the Trump-Bannon agenda, and you disagree with Goldman Sachs executives, etc., in the administration. But when the president talks about fair trade and economic nationalism, and Steve Bannon does as well, does that strike a chord with you at all?
Well, what strikes a chord with me, and I have been on this issue well before President Trump was. We have had a series of trade agreements in this country, NAFTA, CAFTA, PNTR with China, and the TPP, that were written by big money interest to the detriment and the harm of working people. We have lost millions of decent paying jobs over the last 25 years through trade agreements that were written by corporate America that benefited corporate America. So the devil is in the details to what Trump is going to do. What we need is a fair trade policy, not an unfettered free trade policy. Trade is a good thing, but it has got to be fair to the American workers, not just the CEOs of large multinational corporations.
Senator Bernie Sanders joining us from
All right, Bernie Sanders. There's been some criticism on Bernie Sanders' part. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, a few people are saying that, why is Bernie Sanders so worried about what the Democrats are doing and criticizing the Democrats when he's not even a Democrat? He's an independent. There may be some validity there, even though I'm a big Bernie Sanders supporter and I think he's out there fighting a good fight. I wish Obama would get out there and do the same thing, but not for some reason. But there are people out there, you know, criticizing him, and maybe rightly so, but I'm still a Bernie Sanders supporter, and I'm a fan. There's no doubt about that, and that's not going to ever disappear. You know, that will never be changed. All righty, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was Bernie Sanders. That was a clip of Bernie Sanders from a cable television network, which will not be named. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. And we're going to be talking about the actor John Paxton. He passed away 1 or 2 days ago, yesterday. At least we found out about it yesterday. And he passed away from complications from surgery. I don't know if it was heart surgery, but that's just saying surgery. He passed away, actor John Paxton. And it caught a lot of us off guard because he was not in the realm of Arnold Schwarzenegger or Denzel Washington or Ryan Gosling or Keanu Reeves, but he was a mainstay in Hollywood. He was in movies like The Terminator with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was in movies like True Lies, also with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I have a few movies of him. Twister, he was in that. Titanic, he was in quite a few. He was in just recently a movie that he was in, Hatfields and McCoys, something like that, which I was recently watching. I thought it was pretty good. It was pretty good as HBO series. He was also in a movie with Denzel Washington called Two Guns, which was an awful movie, but it was terrible. That's why you probably didn't hear Denzel Washington bring it up at the Oscars. He didn't win anything. And that's the thing about the Oscars. Denzel, everybody thought that Denzel was going to easily win for Fences. Even Denzel thought he was going to win for Fences, but he did not. I think it went to the guy from Moonlight, I believe. And however, Viola Davis, his wife, actress Viola Davis, who played his wife in Fences, she won. Everybody thought Ryan Gosling was going to win for La La Land. But the woman who played his wife in the picture, in the movie, she won. So it was a good night for leading ladies, actually. But still in all, you know, I mean, he was nominated. He got to go to the Oscars. It's still a big plus for his career. Whether he directed and starred in the movie, but still, just by her winning best actress, it still was a positive for Denzel. Denzel is a great actor. I mean, he is a super actor. I don't think there's not a person in America, maybe around the world, that doesn't have a Denzel Washington movie in their possession, in their homes. A Denzel Washington movie, or more than one, two, or three, or four Denzel Washington movies in their own library, in their own movie library, in their own home. You know, so he is a great actor. And I say that because I have quite a few, you know, all the way back to, let's see, Training Day, John Q. I mean, either further back than that, he's a great actor. The Equalizer. Now, I wasn't too crazy about The Magnificent Seven, you know, the remake, the 12th or 13th remake of The Magnificent Seven, starring Denzel Washington. I have it here. I'm not too crazy about it. You know, I don't think that it did much for the genre. I mean, like I've said, I think The Magnificent Seven has been remade about four or five times. There was even a television series show, The Magnificent Seven. That was canceled a few years ago. However, all of these remakes, television shows, all of this stuff for The Magnificent Seven, the original still ends up the best of them all. The best of them all, with Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen, James Coburn, Robert Vaughn, Charles Bronson. All of these people are dead and gone right now, but that was the best Magnificent Seven movies, the 1960 movie with Eli Wallach as the bad guy. Before he starred in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. But anyway, let's get back. I'm always getting off track. John Paxton, the actor John Paxton, it was just a sudden death. He was only 61 years old. And he was mentioned at the Oscars on the day of his death. He was mentioned at the Oscars. And that was great. That was wonderful. I was wondering if they're going to mention him in the memorandum. It was one lady, I can't recall her name, but they said that she was dead, and she came out and said, I'm not dead, but you got me up there for her. Why do you have me up there? All righty, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, folks. It has been a blast. I want to thank my guest once again, Paul Delger, soon to be author. I mean, I have all kinds of people on the show because everybody has a story. Everybody has a story to write or to tell. And this is a show for that. You know, it's not always about politics, but sometimes politics do saturate some parts of the show, or sometimes most of it, because I get so passionate about what's going on here in the world. And it's all about making the world a better place. And that's what we're going to try to do. That's what I'm here to do. I'm not going to say, you know, we're going to do this, and it's going to happen. It's going to take all of us. It's going to take everybody out here. I remember that song by Michael Jackson called Man in the Mirror. And it's clearly stated, if you want to make the world a better place, look at yourself and make a change. make that change. You want to make a better place? Go out and help somebody who needs help. You want to make the world a better place? Give of yourself more. Give more of yourself and of your time than money. Sometimes giving money is not the all in all at trying to do something nice for somebody. Sometimes giving up your time and your effort, of your abilities, your knowledge, that's all it takes sometimes to make the world a better place, to enlighten someone's life. Just like I've got through discussing with Paul, when you're helping someone and when you have helped someone and they give you positive feedback on what you've done, that only makes you want to do it even more. That's worth more weight in its gold right there, is to say, hey, George, I like what you said. That's great talk. I've been motivated from it. I like your guests. I think that person was wonderful. I learned a lot. I'm going to do something. I'm going to talk to my kids about this. I'm going to blah, 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 blah. It's great. It's wonderful. I mean, we don't have to be selfish. We can give of ourselves to other people and make their lives bloom for them. You know, I mean, hey, well, but you got to watch out for the scams. Everybody out there, they're not in need of help. So you got to weed through it and make sure you're not being scammed, because it's that time now. It's just the way of the world is. Scammers, they're not going to go away. I mean, they're like a cancer, you know. It's always going to be there. Scammers. So it's all about making the world a better place. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening and giving of yourself and of your time, because I know it's a lot of people out there who are doing exactly what I'm talking about, and they don't need me to tell them that. It's just in their heart to do these kinds of things. In their hearts to do these kinds of things. I'm working on a story called A Heart of Love. And I'm going to add some of my experience in that story. And, you know, so I haven't started on it. It's going to be a while. But anyway, I do have the title. Give of yourself, give of your time, and, you know, you'll feel good about it. You'll feel great about it. You know, because I do. Every time I do the show, once it's over, I felt as if I've touched someone out there, even if it just won someone. You know, you touch somebody. Somebody's getting something from what you're saying. Somebody's getting something from what you write. You know, that's a good thing, and especially when you get the feedback from that. And I get a lot of feedback. I don't get as much as I would like, but I get a lot of it.
At first, you both seem pretty cordial to each other.
Yep.
Fast forward a few weeks, he's calling you the head clown.
Yes.
You're chanting dump Trump at rallies. Clearly, you're not working together anymore. So what do you mean by dump Trump?
Well, we have to stop him when, look, here's what I believe. You should always be guided by your values. That's my internal gyroscope. The higher up you go in politics and in anything else in life, the more fierce the winds blow. So if you have your own beliefs, your own values, and stick with them, you'll stay on course. So when Trump calling me names doesn't affect me, Trump trying to flatter me, which he did, doesn't affect me. If he sticks with the right values, I won't oppose things just because the name Trump is on it. But when he's against our values and American values, I'll fight him tooth and nail. And that's my guide, not what Trump says or doesn't say.
Right. Senator, let's get to this other personality issue with him, because Senator Al Franken last week said, and I quote him, a few Republican senators think President Trump may have mental health issues. Now, I hate to brag, but I said that months ago. And I got a lot of flack from Bill O'Reilly saying I was being disrespectful, but now everybody's wondering about it. Do you share his concerns?
Let me put it like this. When you talk to Republicans quietly, you know, in the cloakroom, in the gym, they are having real problems with him. Now, very few, John McCain to his credit, but very few have had the courage to oppose him, even though they know he's doing a lot of things that are against what America is all about.
What are they afraid of?
Well, they're party loyalists. He's given them a Supreme Court nominee that they want. Mm-hmm. But my prediction is he keeps up on this path, which is likely. I don't think he'll change. Mm-hmm. Within 3-4 months, you're going to see a whole lot of Republicans breaking with him.
I hope so.
And that's the salvage of America.
I hope so.
That is the hope of America.
This, Chuck, this, I think very few people would do any more than kvetch at him if he were to do it the right way. Right. Do you know what I mean? If you do things the right way, then we can have a dialogue and disagree as we do. But the minute you veer off into some insane place, when you put people in charge who truly don't know what they're doing, I have questions to the Republicans. Why would you allow all of this? So is the Republican happier because he's got a Supreme Court nominee? Is that more important than what the Constitution stands for?
You're right, Whoopi. I was so disappointed. So many of the cabinet was the worst cabinet I've ever seen in the history of America. Wow. First, Donald Trump. Yeah. Donald Trump campaigned on cleaning up Wall Street and getting the special interests and swamp out of the cabinet.
Yeah.
We call his cabinet the swamp cabinet, billionaires and bankers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Totally against what he campaigned on. Some of these people, Donald Trump got up and said, I am not going to cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Two of his top cabinet nominees have made their career of cutting Medicare, Medicaid, and one of them Social Security. So he's totally deviating from what he said. I told him this. I said, you know, you campaigned, and just what you said, Whoopi, in a different way, you campaigned as a populist against both the Democratic and Republican establishments. Mm-hmm. And if you continue to do that, you'll have some successes. Mm-hmm. But if you do what you've been doing, just move to the hard, hard right, mm-hmm. way beyond what most Republicans are for, mm-hmm. you're going to be a failure.
Yeah,
and that's what's going to happen.
But he's listening to Bannon.
That's the
problem.
I think that he thinks he did it his way and he won and he's not going to change very soon.
Right.
But I do think and hope and pray that a lot of the Republicans, they're mainstream people. I don't agree with them on the issues, but they're good people. Mm-hmm. That they will feel they have no choice but to break with them.
I agree with you.
What John McCain said is so real.
Wow. Yeah,
that, you know, the press has always been a counter to people in power.
Yes.
What Donald Trump, none of us, every one of us gets criticized with the press, by the press. We don't like it. But it makes, probably keeps us better.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And when he totally just demeans them, and when he's wrong and then calls them fake news, that's trouble for the democracy.
Yes, Senator, there have been many people are concerned about recent allegations. Many people are concerned about these recent allegations that the White House potentially has ties to Russia. And there have been reports that there may have been communication between the Trump campaign and Russian officials all throughout the election.
Yes.
What is going to happen here? Can you reassure people? Will they get to the bottom line of this? And what do you expect? How's this going to play out?
Well, first, one thing we know for sure. Every intelligence agency who's looked at this, all the law enforcement, that Russia tried to influence the election. Mm-hmm. That alone is a terrible thing. We have not had that. In that Constitution,
mm-hmm.
they talk about something called the Emoluments Clause,
yeah.
which means a president should not get any benefit from a foreign country, because mm-hmm. they were worried about foreign countries having undue influence.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that means he should publish his tax returns. That means he should divest of all his holdings so he doesn't benefit.
Okay.
But was there... So Russia tried to influence. Was there... did Trump participate in that and help?
Yeah.
If he did, that's really serious. Right now, there's an investigation going on by the FBI. And what I have called for today, actually, in a article in the Washington Post, I am worried that Jeff Sessions, mm-hmm. the attorney general, is so close to Trump mm-hmm. in so many ways that that investigation certainly won't have the appearance of impartiality mm-hmm. and may not be impartial itself. Yeah. So I've called today on Jed Sessions to recuse himself. And if you agree with that, TV audience, tell your senator or congressman to do it.
Right. Can I just say that Republicans... Yeah. Republicans should back you up on that, because as we know, many Republicans called for a special prosecutor when it came to Hillary Clinton and her potential email scandal and Benghazi and all
and
those
Obama,
things for the right reasons.
Right.
So do you have Republican support on that? What does that feel like
not
behind
yet,
the scenes?
But hopefully
well,
we'll
you
get
should.
Some.
I'm a libertarian
just,
and
just started
he should.
Today. But if people, you know, it works. These ideas of people going to town hall meetings and telling their Republican senators and congressmen they should change works.
Yes.
Writing, calling, emailing,
okay.
tweeting works.
Let me ask
please
you,
do it.
About
right?
his taxes, just before we go to break, I have
yes.
to know this because there's a law, 1924
yes.
law, that gives a certain congressional committees the power to subpoena
yep.
tax returns. The chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, his name is Kevin Brady,
yep.
he can request them.
Right.
He's shooting that law down, citing privacy concerns. Now, isn't the it is
that's bunk. There
that's
is no. It's a law,
for.
And he can ask. So can Orrin Hatch, who's the head of the Finance Committee, and Ron Wyden, who's the
yeah.
from Oregon, who's the Democratic ranking member, has asked Orrin Hatch to use this law. We're going to push hard for this law. The president has no excuse not to make all his tax returns public.
Yes.
That's an obligation of every
yeah.
president.
All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I was just transfixed on what they're saying about Trump. And, you know, every day in the news, there's something. Democrats on Trump's first 40 days says he's not a populist, but he's a fat cat. We know that. I mean, that's no news. I mean, the Democrats, they don't control anything. Only thing they can do is bitch about Trump. But if they but they have to keep up fighting, keep up their face, keep in some cases, keep talking, keep being in front of the camera. So not to appear irrelevant, because this is what can happen because the Republicans control everything, every damn thing. But the Republicans are going to screwed his country up. That's no doubt about it. And Trump has done a lot already. And he's going to continue to do things, regardless of what people say, how much it'll hurt people, working people, poor people, people just trying to make ends meet. These people don't give a damn. They just don't care. And you can almost take that to the bank, because it's true. All righty, we're going to be talking about, okay, Chicago public schools. We're going to do this, folks, and then we're going to be back and we're going to talk about Chicago public schools, because it is a mess. And you know what? If anybody's got their kids into Chicago public schools, take them out, homeschool them, you know, teach them yourself, homeschool them, hire somebody to teach your kids, put them in private school. Schools or something, but public schools are so bad. You know, it's just, especially Chicago public schools. I can't speak for too many other public schools around the country. I'm pretty sure a lot of them have their acts together, or they have their own problems. But anyway, Chicago public schools are a mess. I'll be right back to tell you more. All righty. She makes me laugh, folks. All righty. We're going to talk about Chicago Public Schools. And all right, Chicago Public Schools the school year could end on June 1st without state money. See, I've talked about so many times on this show about Illinois not having a budget. We're going into our third year with this guy with no budget. There's no budget in place. A budget means that money cannot be spent. Money owed to the schools, some of the colleges, universities, public universities, a lot of the things that they need, they can't get because there's no budget. And Bruce Rauner refuses to enact a budget for the state of Illinois for three consecutive years that he's been in office as governor. So therefore, the Chicago Public Schools aren't getting any money that they need to continue to operate, at least, you know, full time in a great capacity. Okay, CPS, Chicago Public Schools could end the school year on June 1st. That's 2 weeks earlier because there is no money started. Look at how many students, 30, 40, 50,000 students in the city of Chicago. These kids are going to be affected by this. Think about all those kids that are graduating. They got to hustle and bustle now to try to graduate on time. And graduating from high school or a public school at any point, especially high school, is a good thing because you want to get away from all of this garbage. Okay. All right. More than $100 million. The schools are more than $100 million in the red on the hook for a $721 million teacher pension payment. CPS, Chicago Public Schools, said the school year could end on June 1st. This is horrible. My son has one more year in a public school, and I dread it. I dread that he's had to even go to these schools. I've had other choices, but, you know, I just got through saying, folks, if your kid is graduating from one of these rotten schools, so be it. But if you have kids in grammar school and early high school, take them out and try to teach them yourself. But you know what a teacher told me once? He said, well, it's good to homeschool your kids, but a lot of parents do not have the skills to homeschool their children. That's true. That is very true. And but these public schools are just awful. I mean, because it's political. Everything is political. They should take politics out of these schools, but they will not, especially Chicago schools. You know, they will not. And the governor is not going to sign any budget because he doesn't want a budget. Take that back. I think he does want a budget, but he's not going to give Illinois a budget until the state legislature in Illinois gives him what he wants. So if they give him what he wants, he'll give them what they want. And what they want is a budget for the state of Illinois. But they're not going to budge and give Rauner anything that he wants because they think giving Rauner what he wants is going to be detrimental to Illinois, which is going to decimate families, middle-class families. And I totally agree. Giving Rauner what he wants, it means he's going to go after unions. He wants to bust unions in some of these schools. And that's why he's not giving money to these schools because he doesn't like the unions. Most of these schools are, most of the people a part of these public schools, teachers, students, parents, they're Democrats. And he's a Republican. Rauner is something like Donald Trump. He wants to be head honcho. He wants to be numero uno. He doesn't think that he's a public figure. He doesn't want people to know where he is, what he's thinking. He doesn't want to talk to the press. He doesn't want to answer questions. He's a strange kind of a mayor. Governor. He's a strange type of a governor, you know. he gives his speeches and nobody listens, nobody watches. He does his YouTube or Facebook video, nobody listens, nobody watches, because he's an asshole governor. That's why. And yet he will not, he's destroying Illinois, or he wants to destroy it, or he has destroyed it somewhat by not issuing a budget. A lot of these vital social programs have closed down, closed their doors. People have lost their jobs. Kids are being thrown out in the street. The mentally ill have been thrown out in the street. Homeless people. People have lost their jobs. But, you know, he's a billionaire. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. And yet this guy wants to run for a second term as governor of Illinois. I've said many times, he's demented. He is really demented. He hasn't done one sacred positive thing for the state of Illinois. He's enacted a few executive orders, but in turn of working with the legislature, he hasn't done a damn thing. And majority of the things that he has done, if he's done anything at all, it has hurt Illinois. But yet he's always trying to spin and lie his way out of it as if we're dummies and that we should believe it. No way. But anyway, they're saying that Chicago Public Schools are going to could end if there's no money or no budget or no nothing given to the Chicago Public Schools and the teachers' pension, that the schools could end 2 weeks before it should in the city of Chicago. Now, that's bad. That shows you how much these ignorant-ass fools put the kids, the students of this state, of this city, first. They do exactly nothing. They think of themselves and put the schools last. I don't know, Forrest Claypool, I think he's I'm still, the jury is still out on this guy for me. He's the superintendent of Chicago Public Schools, and it seems like he's fighting for the children. It really does. But Rauner has he has a deaf ear. He doesn't hear anything. He's saying, give me what I want, or there will be no budget for 4 years. 4 years. And the Constitution says there should be a budget every year. And I've said this before several times. The Republicans don't give a damn about any kind of Constitution, because they break every law there is in the Constitution, and there's no punishment. There's no retribution for that. They just do it and just walk away scot-free. So you ask yourself, so what does the Constitution mean anyway, if you can break laws of the Constitution and not suffer consequences for it? Republicans don't. I mean, Bruce Rauner has been in office 3 years, and he has not gotten Illinois a budget, which clearly states in the Illinois Constitution that he is responsible for. Because if there's no budget for the state of Illinois, it means that he's not doing his job, no matter what he does with his executive orders. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's 7:24, straight up Chicago time. We're just about off the air, folks. I'm having so much fun. I want to do another hour, but we'll be back tomorrow. I mean, I hope you join me tomorrow. And thanks to my guest, Paul Delger, if I can pronounce it. You know, sometimes it's hard for me because I do stutter. There's no doubt about that. And you probably know that. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I hope you guys join me tomorrow. Let's see what we can find here. All right, we're going up and down the clipboard. Okay, we are, it's been a great time, folks. It's been beautiful. It's wonderful. I hope you join me tomorrow. And tomorrow is actually, from the time of the show, is the last day of February. And March is just around the corner. And March will be another. Matter of fact, I'm all booked up for March. All wonderful guests, great guests, all booked up for March. And that should be totally interesting. All right, folks, I hope you join me tomorrow on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Bye bye, everybody.
bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
Because it's been great. Once again, I want to thank my guest, Paul Dilger, for being on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Join me tomorrow. More guests. Bye-bye, everybody.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about...
Yes.